Parashas Mishpatim. We have the parsha of what's called Eved Knani, and what we want to do is we want to analyze this parsha, or at least one dimension therein, on a level that goes beyond simple pshat. What I mean is that the Torah can be understood on many different levels, and the main goal is to find a message. And the message should be, ideally, eternal. Why do I say eternal? In the case of Eved Knani, as we're going to see soon, based on the Magen Avraham, the laws of Eved Knani no longer are applicable in our time. And if that be the case, we're reading a parsha that is totally theoretical, which is fine. That's called Drosh V'Kabel Schar. The Gemara actually tells us, and especially the Midrashim, that there are many parshas in the Torah that are defined as Drosh V'Kabel Schar. Just learn the parsha, and you'll get rewarded for the learning. Like, for example, Ben Sora Morer, according to Chazal, the conditions are such that there is no such thing as Ben Sora Morer, but nevertheless, Drosh V'Kabel Schar.
The Kavanos in the morning, Shachri.
Say it one more time.
The Karbanos section.
The Karbanos. Okay, yeah. Karbanos is more than just Drosh V'Kabel Schar, because when the Migdash will be restored,
well, yeah.
But in the case of Ben Sora Mora, the Gemara says even if the Migdash was standing, you wouldn't have a Ben Sora Mora. And one could ostensibly apply that same logic to Eved Knani and say that even if the Magen Avraham is right, and the assumption is there's no Eved Knani today, but Drosh V'Kabel Schar. But on a deeper level, what Drosh V'Kabel Schar means is to try to find an eternal message that's in the parsha. And that forces us to go beyond the surface level, you know, and plunge below, which is called Drash and Remez and then Sod and so forth and so on. So in the case of Eved Knani, we have a challenge. If we want to find some dimension of the parsha that has a meaning or a message for us today. And that's what this essay is all about. Having said that, let's read one particular passage or one particular dimension of the laws that apply to Eved Knani. And this is written here in Parshas Mishpatim, in Shmos Perek Chaf Aleph. It says the following. Within the context of the relationship between the Adon means the master who owns the Eved, and the Eved, we're going to learn that if the Adon hits his Eved and injures his Eved in a very fundamental way, which is called Eino Osheino, we'll read the pasuk. It says, V'chi ake ish es ein avdo, o es ein amoso v'shichaso, is lechavshi yishalchenu tachas eino. And in the next pasuk, again, we'll interpret these two psukim as a unit. V'im shein avdo o shein amaso yapil lechavshi yishalchenu tachas sheino. So we have what's called shein v'ayin, literally a tooth or an eye. And in this particular occasion, in a clash between the Adon and his Eved, or his Ama, his Shivcha, the Adon was responsible for the loss of either, in one case, the eye of the Eved, and that means the sight from that eye, or alternatively, the Shein, he took out a tooth of the Eved, or the Shivcha. And the Torah says in this case, Yishalchenu lachofshi, he has to let the Eved go free. And we're not going to wait until the time is for the Eved to go free. This itself interrupts the time period, and the Eved goes free. Now again, the Magen Avraham, which you'll see in the second paragraph, tells us that the laws of Eved Knani do not apply in our time. The reason for that is because of what's called Dina de Malchusa Dina, which means that we're subject to the laws of the land in which we live. So let's say the Magen Avraham, that 4.5 centuries ago, lived in Poland. And the laws of Eved Knani could not be applied in Poland because of the local law. And for example, in the basic law in Judaism, according to Halacha, Eved is called Gufo Konui L'Rabo. in a case of a non-Jewish Eved, called an Eved Kanani, we'll talk about a Jewish Eved in just a minute, then his body becomes a what's called a Cheftz Shel Mamon, meaning it's an object that has monetary value, and that value is owned by the master. And in our time, says the Magen Avraham, we don't have ownership over the body of an Eved, of another human being, according to the law of the land. So therefore, the law of an Eved will not apply today. Now that's good news in a sense, because for example, in the case of Jewish law, we have to grant the Eved Kanani a day off on Shabbos. We can't work the Eved on Shabbos. That's called Din Shvisas Avdo B'Shabbos. And in the case of a secular government, you would be allowed to work the Eved on Shabbos. And therefore, the halacha of Eved Kanani doesn't apply. Lo Shayach Din Shvisas Avdo B'Shabbos Al Goy HaOved Eitzel Yisrael. Notice the mandate, according to halacha, that you have to let the Eved off, give him a day off, and you can't work him on Shabbos, is not enforced in our time. Again, if we had the Magen Avraham in front of us, we'd go through the Magen Avraham and see all his arguments. But the bottom line is, according to the Magen Avraham, the parsha of Eved Kanani is drosh v'kabel schar, meaning we learn it, we'll be rewarded for the Talmud Torah in it, but we want to perhaps extract a deeper message that's hidden below the surface, that could be an eternal message, even for us today. Now, I don't know if any of you remember that a few weeks ago, we had a discussion here in this very room about the Parah Aduma, which again doesn't apply today, the red cow, the heifer. And we tried to derive certain eternal messages from the parasha of Parah Aduma. We're going to try to do the same thing, apply the same methodology with regard to Eved Kanani. Now, we know that an Eved Kanani goes free with Shein V'Eved, with Shein V'Ayin. Now, we're going to study a statement of Rabbi Yochanan in Masechta Brachos, and you'll see this if you're following the text in the third paragraph in this essay, in the second half of that paragraph. Rabbi Yochanan, the great Tana, says the following. This is in the context of Yisurim and Tshuva. Yisurim means suffering. If man suffers, I'm not talking about self-inflicted pain, but if man suffers as a result of the course of nature, Rabbi Yochanan insists that that Yisurim, that anguish, that suffering, has a cathartic impact on a person, and it cleans him of his sins. In the language of Rabbi Yochanan, Yisurim haboim al ha'adam, when a person never suffers, let's take the example of physical ailment, he's bedridden, he's suffering from pain, memarkim es avonosav, they cleanse him of his sins, they grant him kapara. There are many different experiences and activities which man can engage in to bring about atonement for his sins. The greatest and the most common of which is tshuva. And then we have korbanos. And then we have vidui. And we have Yom HaKippurim. And we have malchus in the case of a criminal. We have misa. These are all on the list. Rabbi Yochanan is adding another element onto this list, and that's called yisurim. When a person suffers, it's going to bring about memarkim es avonosav. So you may want to underline those words, memarkim es avonosav, which means it cleanses him of his sins. Now, how does Rabbi Yochanan know such a thing? What is the basis or the source for his conclusion? And it becomes a combination of A and B. A is a verse in Tehillim, Kapitel number Tzadi Dalet. Ashrei Agever Asher Tiyasrenu Ka Umitorascha Silamdenu. Al Tikri Silamdenu Ela Silamdenu. Okay, let's understand what Rav Yochanan sees in the pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk says that if a person suffers, you saw that word tiyasreno, again underline that word, which means yisurim, then ashrei, then he has something fortunate. Now, what is lucky about a person who suffers? The last person in the world you would describe as someone who's fortunate is someone who has yisurim never, right? So the answer has to lie in the end of this pasuk, mitorascha salamdenu, which means from our Torah, you can derive the conclusion that the surim are a good thing insofar as they bring memarkin es avonosav. They cleanse him cathartically of his sins. Where though, says Rabbi Yochanan, will you see that in the Torah? How do you know that from the Torah itself we can learn, we can derive the conclusion that a person through Yisurim is going to achieve this level of atonement for his sins? And the answer is Kal Vachomer. Now Kal Vachomer is one of the 13 hermeneutic principles by which we derive conclusions from the Torah. And this means Torascha Talamdenu, means the Torah will teach us with this Kal Vachomer how great Yisurim could be. Again, when I say great, I don't want anyone misunderstanding me. Don't walk out of here thinking that Rabbi Berzon told you Yisurim is a great thing. You know, it's a great thing to suffer, you know. I didn't mean that. What I mean is that the side benefits of Yisurim are really great because it's a way of achieving Kapara. And sometimes Hashem brings a person into a state of suffering, of Yisurim in this world, which makes him clean and pure when he comes to the next world. So there in the next world he can get pure reward. Which is, by the way, one of the answers to the question of what we call tzaddik v'ralo. I think in English it's called theodicy, which means, why do we see good people suffering? And the answer is that sometimes God brings that suffering so that they'll have a perfect record for the very few possible sins or deficiencies that they have. What is this Kal Vachomer? Now watch this Kal Vachomer. This is going to bring us back to our discussion in Parashas Mishpot. Shein v'ayin. Now, Shein v'ayin means a suffering, Nebuch, on the part of this Eved, in one particular limb or part of his body. Ma Shein v'ayin, Shehein echad mi'evarav shel Adam. In the cases of Shein v'ayin, look at the benefit. Again, this is not something that the Eved wanted, obviously, but what are the side effects or the side benefits of the loss of a tooth or the loss of an eye? It's only one Eiver. And yet the Torah declares that the Eved is Yotze ben Lecherus. You know, if the Adon, if the master would have beaten him up, you know, till he's black and blue from head to toe, that's one thing. But the Torah is saying that if one Eiver, one part of the body, these Shein v'Eiver, was destroyed by the Adon, the Eved is free. Is Yisurim Shememarkim kol gufo shel Adam. When you suffer, you feel pain in your entire body. Yisurin is an experience in which a person falls, you know, he falls into his bed, he can't walk on his feet, he's totally weak from head to toe. Is alachas kama v'kama? How much more so can he go lecheirus? Can he experience freedom? Freedom from the punishments of a sinner in the next world. Comes along the Pnei Yoshua, he lived about 2.5 centuries ago, and the Rif, now this is not the Rif that we know as a super commentary on Shas, because that Rif lived about 11 centuries ago. We're talking about Pinto. Have you ever heard the name Pinto? Pinto is a very common Spanish or Portuguese family of Sfaradim, and Rav Yoshua Pinto wrote a commentary on the Ein Yaakov. Now, again, if we had time, I would talk to you a lot about the Ein Yaakov. The Ein Yaakov is the greatest anthology on Agadita. So whenever you're learning Agadita, then you have to learn it with Ein Yaakov. You should have two books in front of you. The Marsha and the Ein Yaakov. The Marsha is published in the back of the Gemara, so you don't even have to get up from your chair. And the Ein Yaakov is a set, which I hope we have here in the Emek Learning Center, Shlita. And I have it at home in Harnof. And it's a six-volume work, a tremendous contribution, a compilation of commentaries on the Agadot. Speak a drop loud if you don't mind. The Ben Ishchai. The Ben Ishchai is another commentary on the Agadot. That's not published in the Ein Yaakov. That's a separate sefer. The many svarim on Agadot, but you can't move from the spot without these two svarim, the Mashah and the Ein Yaakov. Those are the two basics. So those are the Bibles. After that, you have commentaries like the Ben Ishchai, which is a fantastic commentary on the Agadot, and many, many other books on the Agadot. The Maral wrote extensively on the Agadot. These are all great books. So there are two commentaries that came up with the same objection, the same question on Tosfos, the Pnei Yoshua and Rabbi Yoshaya Pinto. If I'm not mistaken, the Pinto family goes back to Portugal, and when they were expelled from Portugal, many of them went on to Holland, to what was called then the Netherlands. Anyway, so now we have the Ein Yaakov. What is going on in this Rav Yochanan? The law is that if the Adon owns what's called an Eved Ivri, a Jewish slave, then the Eved continues even if the Adon takes out his eye or his tooth. The halach of Yotzei Lecheres, in the case of Shein V'ayin, that he goes free, only applies to an Eved Knani. Now it's very odd. Rabbi Yochanan wants to derive from a Kal V'chomer the power of Yisurim, because look, in the case of two of this choice between one Eved or the other, but it's only one Eved, the Eved goes free, and how much more so can we achieve this freedom from our severe violations through Yisurim, which of American is called a goof. But that's not really true. I have what's called a pircha on the Kal V'chomer. You know, whenever you have a Kal V'chomer, if I show you an exception to the rule, then you have to just completely, you have to take the Kal V'chomer and put it into the rubbish pile. That's called a pircha. And I have a pircha. If you're telling me that one aver, the loss of one member, the one organ, is enough to generate freedom, I'll prove to you that's not so. From the case of an eved ivri, he says the following. This is on the bottom right column, going on to the top of the middle column. He says, "Hare din zesha eved yotze lecheres b'shein v'ayin hu rak bi eved knani." Avol bi eved ivri eino yotze b'shein v'ayin. The Torah says in the parasha of Eved Ivri, a Jewish slave, v'chiyimkar ish es bito li'oma, that's called an Oma Vriya, which is the female counterpart to an Eved Ivri, lo teitzei kitzei tavadim. She does not go free in the same way that an Eved, a non-Jewish Eved or a non-Jewish Shivcha would go free. Says Rashi, lo teitzei kitziyas avodim knanim she yotzim b'shein v'yayin. That in the case of an Eved Ivri, a Jewish slave, a Hebrew slave, in contrast to the Eved Knani, the Eved does not go free with Shein V'ayin. Zu, meaning this Jewish woman who is an Om Evriya, lo teitzei v'Shein V'ayin. She goes out either, depends which comes first, the end of 6 years, or the Yovel, which is the Jubilee 50th year. Yachol ha'ivri yotze b'roshi evarim tamid lomar ha'ivri ha'ivri ha'makish ivri livriya ma'ivriya eino yotze b'roshi evarim af hu eino yotze b'roshi evarim. In other words, if you think that maybe there's a difference between a male Jewish slave or a female Jewish slave, we have a special ribui to include and equate a male Jewish slave with a female Jewish slave. And just like in the case of an Om Evri, a female Jewish slave, she doesn't go free with Rosh Evarim. So too in the case of a Jewish male slave, he doesn't go out with Rosh Evarim. So therefore we end up with the following question. How does Rabbi Yochanan have a license to formulate this Kal V'chomer and prove through this Kal V'chomer that Yisurim Memarkim Avonosav Shel Adam? We're talking about the question of a Jew and whether a Jew can survive you know, can gain something, if you will, from suffering, and he wants to gain this cathartic experience, you can't derive that from Shem V'Yayin, because Shem V'Yayin doesn't even apply to a Jew. It only applies to Eved Kenani. And this is called a pircha. In other words, if I show you an exception to your rule, you can't derive conclusions to that rule, because I'll show you and I'll demonstrate that that rule has exceptions. So if it was true that every Eved would go out to Shein V'ayin, then we could justify Rabbi Yochanan's Kavachomer. But if you found one case of an Eved that goes out to Shein V'ayin, he goes free, but it doesn't apply to another case of an Eved, then that's a pircha on the Kavachomer. And the Rif, who's, as I said before, the super commentator on the Ein Yaakov, he writes, Ube emes hu koshi gadol lo ra'isi mi shekadmoni bazeh. He says, this is a very difficult objection to Rabbi Yochanan in Masechet Brachos, and I don't find anyone who wrote about this before I did. And therefore, I'm left with a... you know, what we call a tzarech ian gadol. You know, I don't know how to answer this question. However, I think there's a phone going off. If somebody wouldn't mind, you know, just quieting it down a little bit, unless it's an emergency situation. I don't know. You know, if you're a cardiologist or something, you got to keep your phone on. You know what I mean? Avram, you're not a cardiologist, are you?
No.
No. Okay. All right. You don't know. I mean, you went to medical school, but you don't remember you forgot what you majored in. Okay. Okay. So now, what we want to do, as I told you, there are two super commentaries on Agadita. One is the Ein Yaakov, and the other is the Marsha. The Marsha says something very short, very abridged, on this Gemara of Rabbi Yochanan in Brachos Daf Hei. But perhaps there's a kernel of an answer to our question. The Marsha says the following, and this is the third paragraph in the middle column on page one. He says the following: Aninu di eved knani mitzad avonos avosav nishtabet. In Yano, what we have to understand about Rabbi Yochanan's statement is that an Eved Knani, a non-Jewish slave, was taken as a slave by virtue of a divine scheme. And in that divine plan, he was the product of certain sins that maybe go back to his forefathers. Maybe he was guilty of the same sins as his forefathers. And therefore, he was taken as a slave. And he bases himself on the parsha of Noach. When Noach gets drunk, you may remember that his nakedness is exposed, and Cham, which is one of his three sons, instead of covering his father, he does something else. It's not clear exactly what he did, but he certainly humiliated his father in that state of drunkenness. And as a result, Cham, who's the father of Canaan, was cursed. And it says, Vayhi Knan Eved Lomo. Knan is going to be cursed with avdus, with slavery. However, even though this curse, this metaphysical curse from the divine being, is imposed on Knan, the descendants of Cham, but nevertheless, the Torah told us a big chiddush, that this curse can be removed. It can be terminated. And the Eved could go back to his state of Cheres, of being liberated, of being free. How? Through the Yisurim, by suffering from Shein V'Yayin. He goes out, and he's liberated. Lemarek bo avon avosa. It means that since this process by which the Eved Kenani became an Eved is a result of sin, and in this case the sin of his ancestors, the sin of Cham, the Avi Knan, there's a way of removing the blemish of the sin, and that's through the suffering of the loss of one Aver, whether it's the Shein or the Ayin. Kal v'chomer, how much more so, if a person suffers his entire body, then memarkin avonosav shel Adam. Then for sure he will have this, as we said before, this cathartic experience. Now, does the Marsha answer the question that we raised here, the objection to Rabbi Yochanan and the Pircha, as we said? The Marsha doesn't say anything explicitly. However, if you study the Marsha very carefully, then perhaps you can come up with an answer to this objection. And this is based on a sefer called the Kol Eliyahu. And we're going to see a quote from the Kol Eliyahu on the top left of the third column. The Kol Eliyahu is authored by none other than the Vilna Gaon. And he wants to explain this Kal Vachomer of Rabbi Yochanan. And he says, Ma tam eved yotze b'shen v'ayin? He says, why does the Eved go out free, in the case of an Eved Knani, with Shein V'ayin? And the answer is because of Vayar Vayaged. These two words, Vayar Vayaged, are two words, each of which describes the episode of Noach, when Noach got drunk, as you'll soon see. Because it says in the parasha of Noach, after he got drunk, the pasuk says, Vayar Cham Aviknan es Ervas Aviv. Again, we're not exactly sure what this means, but on a simple level, it means that instead of averting his eyes, you know, instead of humiliating his father by gazing on his nakedness in that state of drunkenness, he should have averted his eyes. But Cham didn't avert his eyes, right? He looked, and that's like an insult to his father. But not only that, the next part of the pasuk says, "Vayaged l'shnei achiv b'chutz." He decides to be the blabbermouth, you know, to publicly tell his brothers, "Hey, look what's going on." In other words, "Vayar vayaged" is a twofold violation. He really is guilty, Cham, of two different things, both of which are disgusting, are repulsive. Deplorable, is there such a word? Yeah. Deplorable. One is that he looks at his father's nakedness, and the second thing is he decides, you know, put a splash it on the front covers. You know, he wants to tell everybody about it. As a result, he's cursed. And what is the curse that's given to Knan, the descendants of Cham? Arur Knan, cursed is Knan, the Torah says. Eved avadim yel echav. He will serve as a slave to his brothers. In this case that we're talking about in Eved Knani, he's a slave to the children of Shem, right? Let's say the Jewish people are amongst the descendants of Shem. Shem is the brother of Cham. And now in this particular scenario, the descendants of Cham are cursed with avdus to the descendants of Shem. That's called Arur Knan Eved Avadim Yeh Le'echav. And Rashi says, Yesh Mi'ar B'Seinu Omrim Knan Ra'a V'Higid Le'aviv. In other words, Rashi's bothered by the change here. On the one hand, it says Vayar Cham. It sounds like Cham is the guilty one. And then in the next pasuk, it says Arur Knan. And the curse is on Knan. So Rashi quotes one school of thought, one opinion amongst the rabbis, that Knan also was guilty in the same way as his father of these two Ra'a V'Higid, of these two sins. If this be the case, then we understand what the Vilna Gaon is saying. The Vilna Gaon says that why does the Eved Knani go out free b'shein v'ayin? And the answer is that shein v'ayin are the two members of the body that correspond to vayar and vayaged. Now shein is a little bit complicated, a bit of a stretch, but let's start with ayin. Ayin obviously it corresponds to Vayar. So it makes sense that the curse for violating this Vayar, which is a kind of insulting, you know, gazing again on your father, that is going to be the suffering of the Ayin when the Eved loses his eye. That's again a punishment for the Vayar. In the case of Shein, if the Eved loses his tooth, this is a bit more complicated. Why? Because Vayaged, apparently when you speak, you use different parts of the mouth, and one of them is the teeth. The teeth are what's called Lechatech Es HaDibur. Again, we need who would be a professional, would be an audiologist? I don't know, who's in charge of this? What professional? We'd have to ask one of the scientists about this, but, you know, maybe a dentist, I don't know. But the claim here is being made that in the process of speech, the teeth play an important role. And that's called chituch hadibur, you know, to really enunciate things properly. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of meeting someone who didn't have his dentures in, you know, and he was toothless. It's very hard, they mumble away, very hard to hear. So if you lose your teeth, it's pretty sad for many reasons, you know. You know, one of them is aesthetic, you know, it's absolutely humiliating to walk around without teeth. But also, it's hard to hear someone if he doesn't have teeth. So that's my scientific basis for accepting what it says here in the Vilna Gaon. In any event, if this Eved suffers either in the Ra'a, meaning his Ayin, or in his Vayaged, Vahigid, meaning his teeth, then that's considered sort of a quid pro quo kind of a punishment, which now alleviates him of the klala, of the curse that was a result of this sin, or the double sin of Vayar and Vayaged. Now, it's very interesting, because the Eved Knani is guilty of a sin, or at least his forefathers, of both Vayar and Vayaged. It's a double sin. And yet, here's the Chiddush. The Torah says that in Lokak Biachas, if he suffers even one of these two, either the tooth or the eye, he goes free. And here there's an inner contradiction, so to speak. There's a revolution of sorts here that's going to be the basis that underlies Rabbi Yochanan's Kal V'chomer that we're trying to explain. Let's go back to the Kal V'chomer. Ma shein v'ayin shema echad me'varav shel Adam. What does he mean that it's only one Aver? He means to say that there were two Avarim that were pogam, that were guilty of this sin of Cham, for which the father of Canaan and his descendants would be cursed. Both Avarim were guilty. And nevertheless, the Torah says that the Eved goes to Cherus even if one of those two Avarim, one of those two organs, was destroyed. So what do you see over here? That if a person, in this case the Eved, is being punished for a double sin, all he has to do is suffer in one organ of the two organs that sin. That's the basis for Rabbi Yochanan's Kal V'chomer. And therefore, Yisurin Shememarkin called Gufa, if a person suffers from head to toe, Alachas Kam V'kama. How much more so is that suffering going to generate a kapora? So again, the Chiddush here is not that there is such a thing as Shein V'ayin of Yotzal L'Cheres. That din of Shein V'ayin Yotzal L'Cheres only applies to an Eved Kanani, not to an Eved Ivri, and therefore we have a Piruch on the Kal V'chomer. But that's not what we're deriving. The Kal V'chomer is not based on the fact that the Eved goes free, b'shein v'ayin, but rather on the fact that the Eved is going to be freed from the klala, which is the punishment for that sin, even though he sinned with two Avarim, again we're going back to Cham or Knan, and yet one Aver is now going to suffer, and that's enough to generate a kapora. So it means that you don't have to have the whole body, or at least all the organs of a body, suffer in order to generate a kapara. How much more so in the case of a person who suffers from head to toe, his entire body is in a state of anguish, how much more so should he experience this kapara, this atonement, what we call Yotze L'Cherus. If this be the case, we now can understand the Marsha. How is it possible to derive from Eved Knani, who goes free with Shein V'ayin, any conclusions about us when the Eved Ivri does not go out with Shein V'ayin? The answer is that we misunderstood the Kal V'chomer. The Kal V'chomer is trying to understand how Kapara works. In Kapara, do you need a total suffering in which all the organs, all the sources of evil and crime are going to be punished, are going to be destroyed? Well, the answer is, take a look at Shein V'ayin in the case of an Eved. He's guilty, this Eved, or again his ancestors, of both Vayar and Vayaged. And yet, he goes free with Shein or Ayin alone, with one organ. With now turning to the flip side, page 2. Afshe Pogam B'Shneim, even though his criminal act was done with two organs. Is how much more so if a person suffers in his whole body, then it would be a kapara on whatever he was pogame with one or the other of his organs. So you follow? If you're going to get a kapara for two organs that sinned, with one suffering of one organ, then how much more so if a person was pogame with one aver and his entire body suffers, how much more so is that going to be a kapara? The fact that an Eved Ivri doesn't go out the Shem V'Ayin is totally, totally irrelevant to Rabbi Yochanan. Now, at this point in time, we are going to study the works of two contemporaries. One was part of the Hasidisha world, and one was part of the non-Hasidisha world. One is called Rav Heschel Mikrakow, and the poskim say that he had a tremendous reputation as a great scholar. The other is the Chassam Sofer. Now, I said by mistake that they were contemporaries. They weren't contemporaries. The Chassam Sofer was a good deal later than Rav Heschel Mikrakow. Rav Heschel Mikrakow was the Rebbe of the Taz and the Shach. The Taz lived 4 centuries ago, so if he was the Rebbe of the Taz, the Chassam Sofer lived about 150 years ago, so that's totally different. In any event, let's see what they have to say. There's a pasuk in Eov, which you'll see in the second paragraph. And Eov says the following. Ma ra Eov al kochel livchar mikol avonos of dafka avon zeh. Eov focuses our attention on one particular sin. And what is that sin? Im em as mishpat avadai or avdi v'yamasi. Right? And if I will somehow disdain this or violate this mishpat, this statute of the Eved and the Ama, berivam amadi, then what's going to happen? Now, when Eov asks this question, he says the following. If I am somehow confused and I abuse the law of the Eved and the Ama, I'm in trouble when I get up in front of the heavenly court and they will accuse me and prosecute against me. Now we're going to try to give a whole nother perspective on this statement of Eov. If anybody happens to have a Tanakh, okay, we won't spend any time now, but it'll be interesting to go through the pasuk in Eov, but let's leave it for the time being. Now, in order to appreciate this pasuk and what Eov had in mind, we're going to have to study the works of Rav Heschel Mikrakow and the Chassam Sofer. They both quote a statement from Rav Hai Gaon. Rav Hai Gaon lived about 1200 years ago. And Rav Hai Gaon said he was perplexed. He wanted to know what would be the law if the Eved Knani instigated a brawl, B-R-A-W-L, against his master. As a result of the misbehavior of the Eved Knani, the Adon hit the Eved, and as a result he removed his eye or his tooth. And Rav Hai Gaon was perplexed. In such a case, does the Eved have the right to go free? Or shall we say that since it was the Eved who initiated, he instigated the confrontation, he was poteach b'meriva, in such a case we're not going to reward him and allow him to go free because the Adon was within his rights to defend himself against this rebellious Eved who's rising up against him, and in the context of doing so, he took out his tooth or his eye. So if Hai Gaon says he couldn't find an answer, again, this is from the Gaonim, this is even before the Rishonim, he looked in the Talmud Bavli, he looked in the Talmud Yeshami, he couldn't find an answer. But he came up with his own original idea. And what was that? He says the following. The Gemara of Rabbi Yochanan derives a conclusion from Shein V'Eved with a Kal V'Chomer that Yisurim Memarkin Avonosim Shel Adam, that suffering could cleanse a person of his sins and atone for his sins. Now, if you're going to tell me that there's no din of Shein V'Ayin, where the Eved goes free, in a case where the Eved instigated the brawl, then how can you derive a Kal V'Chomer from the case of a sinner who's guilty and should be punished for his crimes, and you're going to tell me, well, he suffers physical anguish? Well, maybe in that case the whole parasha of Shein V'Ayin doesn't apply. Because if you're going to tell me, he's arguing from the opposite position, if you're going to maintain the position that since the Eved instigated the fight, the confrontation, therefore he doesn't have rights to go out with Shein V'Ayin, then what's Rabbi Yochanan talking about when he says that we can cleanse ourselves or experience that cathartic memarkinus avonosov as a result of our suffering? Well, you know what? This is not a case of Shein V'Ayin. Because in this case, we initiated the process of criminal act and the deserving of punishment. And now, Rav Haigon wants to go back to the Pasuk in Iyov. The Pasuk in Iyov says the following, that Iyov was a great sufferer, as we all know. The suffering of Job, right? That's what the whole book of Iyov is about. And Iyov would like to believe that through this suffering he gets a complete cathartic, you know, cleansing. But he says the following, Im emas, if I disdain the mishpat, the law of Eved, of Avdi v'amasi, if I would say now that I limit that mishpat of Shein v'Ayin to a case where it was the master, the Adon, who initiated it, but in the case where it was the Eved who started up, Berivam Imadi, and I'm going to say that if they, meaning the Eved here, is the one who stood up against me, and therefore this Mishpat of Shein V'Ayin doesn't apply, then I'm in trouble. Why? Because if God is cleansing me, then it's a situation in which I initiated the sin. And if I'm guilty of the sin, I have no right to be freed of any of the punishment simply because of Shein V'Ayin, because Shein V'Ayin doesn't apply in this case when the Rivam Imadi. And therefore, look at the end of the pasuk. Iyov declares, "Uma esa ki yokum kel v'chi yifkod ma ashivenu." In other words, if a person is guilty of sin, and therefore he has to give what's called a din v'cheshbon, he has to be accounted for in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on his sins, then he won't be able to say in the heavenly court, well, free me from punishment because I already suffered all the anguish. And we won't be able to learn the Kal V'Chomer from Shein V'Ayin of an Eved, because Shein V'Ayin of an Eved only applies when it was the master who instigated the fight, the confrontation. And if the Eved instigated the confrontation, he picked on the Adon and started fighting with him. He rebelled against the Adon. He doesn't go lecheres. If he was the poseach b'meriva, then he doesn't go for cheres. Therefore, says Rav Haigon, we see clearly from the combination of the pasuk in Iyov together with the Kal V'Chomer of Rabbi Yochanan, muchach shegam me'evit poseach b'meriva hu yotze lecheres b'shein v'ayin. So we come to a very revolutionary position or conclusion that even in a situation where it was the Eved himself who initiated the brawl, as we said, he nevertheless goes free b'shein v'ayin. And that's going to be very comforting for us, because we're going to say the following, that if we initiated the sin, nevertheless, if we suffer, then we'll achieve kapar. And now in the next paragraph, he says the following. Is there a way that a person could somehow achieve this kapara, this cathartic experience, without having to suffer? Is there a substitute for Yisurim, for that suffering? And he writes the following. He says that in this parsha of Shein V'Ayin, the Torah is teaching us a new principle, which is very fundamental. Of course, first and foremost, that suffering with the Kal Vachomer from Shem V'Yayin of the Eved Knani is going to bring about Kapara. However, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu choose to teach us this law, or this principle, I should say, in the context of Eved Knani? Eved Knani sha'avdu shalo novas mima shepogam bi'eino v'shinov. The Eved Knani is unique and singular in that he's suffering the curse of Avdus because of the sin of Eino v'shinov, of Vayar and Vayaged. In this context, the Torah chooses to tell us that Yisurim Memarkin es Havera. Why? And he says the following. The Gemara tells us in Brachos, in Roa Adam Shi Yisurim Boin Olav, we're in the middle of column 2, Yefash Beish B'masav. A person sees that he's suffering, he should try to check himself out and investigate and see what it is that perhaps he's not doing right. And this is based on a posse. And the Gemara goes on to ask the following question. Pishpesh velo matza. He couldn't find any guilt. There was no crime that he was guilty of. So why is he suffering? And the Gemara says, Yitle, he should make it dependent on, or attributed to, Bittul Torah, that he was not dedicated to Torah study. And that's based on the pasuk that we started with today in Tehillim Kapitel Tzadi Dalet. Ashrei HaGever Asher Tiyasrenu. How lucky, how fortunate is a person who suffers. Mi Torascha Tolamdenu. Which means that the Torah is teaching us to study the Torah. And if you'll study the Torah and you're not going to be guilty of any sin of Bittul Torah, then you will experience the great cathartic experience. So the Mefarshim say, what does it mean? Yefash beish b'masa v'lo matza yitla b'bittul Torah. And b'bittul Torah is a pretty severe avera. So if he was looking for an avera, then he should have found the avera of b'bittul Torah. What does it mean yitla b'bittul Torah? How can you say he didn't find the avera and then say, well, it's because of b'bittul Torah? If it's because of b'bittul Torah, then he found the avera. So what does it mean he didn't find the avera? So the Tefer Shlomo, one of the great Hasidic rabbis, says the following. That according to the Zohar, if a person wakes up at a late hour, before daybreak, let's say, la'amol b'tor, to work hard in Torah, then ha'Torah modia lo avanosav, the Torah will, so to speak, cover over his sins. V'lo b'derech shel din v'yonesh, and he can completely circumvent the method of punishment, of suffering punishment. Ella ki aim shemodia libna bidvarim rachim. Dvarim rachim means soft words. So when it says pish pesh below matza, he didn't find any sins that would cause him this suffering. Yitle, he should attribute it the reason why he didn't find any sins, bibitl Torah, meaning that he didn't take advantage of this special unique power, what we call skula, of studying Torah at night. Meaning waking up early to study Torah, going to sleep late at night in order to study Torah. And therefore, the Torah is not revealing to him what his sin was all about. Because as we said before, if a person wants to figure out what his sin is and why he's suffering, he should study Torah. And as a result of his studying of Torah, Hashem will reveal to him why he is suffering. And if he couldn't find any sin, it must be that he's missing this element, this skula of learning Torah, specifically at night, when he's tired. And as a result, he doesn't have the ability to reveal what his sins are. And that's what the Gemara means when it says in Sanhedrin, "Kol bayis she'ein divrei Torah nishmoyim bo b'layla eishal chloso." If a person studies Torah at night, then that Torah will protect him from his sins, so that he can do tshuva and save himself from punishment. But if he's not studying Torah at night, and there's no cold Torah in his house at night, then who's going to notify him about his sins? He won't be able to rectify his sins. And that's going to be the very fire that burns his house, so to speak, not literally but figuratively. The fire represents the midah of din. And the midah of din, of justice, is a result of the fact that he is guilty of sin. The man is so confused. He doesn't even know. He's prepared. What is the sin that's causing all this punishment? He doesn't have the insight and the ability to discover the sin in order to rectify his sin. And the reason for that is because he's not busy learning Torah at night. And all this is based on the Tiferet Shlomo, who in turn quotes the Zohar, that HaTorah Mo'udia Lo Es Avinosav, the Torah that he studies is going to reveal to him what his sins are. So he couldn't find the sin. He's perplexed. He doesn't know why he's suffering. If he has Torah study, and specifically Torah study at night, then God, like a very compassionate mother, will reveal to him what his sins are. But if he's not involved, he's not engaged in Torah study at night, he's still in the dark. He has no way of discovering his sins.
Why at night?
What do you say?
Why specifically at night?
It seems that Torah at night is a special relationship, not just to the Torah itself, but to the giver of the Torah. And at night, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there with him when he's studying Torah. And that's the skula, the special power of Torah study at night. Now, if you take a look, we don't have that much time, but I do want to get to page 3 if we can, at least that much. What is the root of Cham and his sin? And this is an amazing chiddush. The Torah testifies, "Vayar Cham aviknan es ervas aviv, vayageid l'shnei echov bachutz." Cham is guilty of this double sin, as we said before, of vayar and vayageid, and as a result, he gets the curse that his descendants Knan will be eved avodin. And the only way that could fix, that could be rectified, is through Shein V'ayin. If you take a look in the Pasuk, in Bereishis, in the story of Noach, it says, Vayomer Hashem l'Noach, Noach, I want you and your family to go into the Teva, because you are the tzaddik in this generation. Take with you the kosher animals, 7 by 7, and from a behemoth that's not kosher, take 2 of each species. And Rashi says, HaTahora, what does this mean, a kosher animal? After all, the laws of kashrus have not been given. So Rashi says, HaSida Lios Tahora LiYisrael, that Noach would understand which animals are kosher, which is called the Behemah Torah. How so? Because Noach learned the Torah itself. Now, if Noach learned the Torah itself, and that's why he knew how to distinguish between kosher and non-kosher animals, then on page 3, we should assume that he would transmit that Torah to his sons, and therefore, his sons would continue in his legacy and study the Torah. That's exactly what's going to happen when it gets to Avraham Avinu. He's going to transmit the Torah to Yitzchak, and then Yitzchak to Yaakov. Now, if you'll ask the question, what was Noach's great accomplishment in life? Why was he worthy of being saved in a generation of the flood when everyone else was wiped off the earth? And the answer is that Noach had the ability to overcome temptation. He was surrounded by a world of pollution, of evil, of hedonistic pleasure seeking, and yet he was able to overcome that all. He was able to be impervious to that influence. How so? And the answer is because of his, Noach's, dedication to Torah. Barasi, Yetzirah, Barasi, Torah, Tavlin. The Tavlin, meaning the antidote to the Yetzirah, when the Yetzirah gets very tough, is dedication to Torah. And that's how you spare yourself and you free yourself from the clutches of the evil of the Yetzirah. So Torah now has a special skula to it, a special power. And if we assume, as we said earlier, that Noach was dedicated to the study of Torah, hence he understood the difference between a kosher animal and a non-kosher animal, that would protect him from the alluring influences and the impact of the Yetzer Hara. That's how Noach remained an Ish Tzaddik. And he was not schlepped, he was not allured into that net of the Yetzer Hara. A person, says the Rambam in Isurei Bia, is Yifna Atzma Machshavta L'Divrei Torah. He should never have a head, I don't know if this word will mean anything to anyone here, jughead, Is that, you remember that comic? You know, Jughead means somebody that's like his head is completely empty. Is that a British thing? I don't know. I remember from the American comic books. What was it called? Marvel? Archie comic books? Okay. So if a person, says the Rambam, is a Jughead, meaning he has nothing in his brain, if he's panui mi divrei Torah, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, and if his brain is empty, then what's going to come into his brain? What's he going to think about? And now that we live in the generation of the internet, and we know the powerful allurement of pornography and so forth, the internet, you can begin to understand what the Rambam has in mind in a very contemporary way. If his brain is not preoccupied with Torah and with intellectual pursuits, it's free and it absorbs a vacuum, and all of a sudden, machsheves harayos misgabros. And if he's a lev panui min hachochma, if he's not involved in chachma, then arayos misgabros. You know, there's a story about Reb Chaim Brisker that he once turned to his son Reb Moshe, and he said to him, "What are you thinking about?" And he expected Reb Moshe to give him a big chakira in lumps. And Reb Moshe says, "I wasn't thinking about anything." So Reb Chaim got very upset. "What do you mean you're not thinking about anything? You should be thinking about some sugya and shas." So the next time that Reb Chaim asked him, "What are you thinking about?" he gave his father one of the most profound chakiras about a sugya that's very complicated, called Chatzi Eved Chatzi Ben Chorin. In any event. But we see clearly that if a person is dedicated to Torah and his mind is always preoccupied with Torah thoughts, that could prevent him from any thoughts about arayos. And therefore, barasi yetzara barasi Torah tavlin. And therefore, when the Torah says, yege yoma v'layla, that day and night a person should be dedicated to the study of Torah, that's the method by which a person can protect himself from the yetzara. And that's how Noach, in a generation of total pollution, was able to withstand all those temptations and allurements because he was dedicated to the Torah. And the Torah itself is, as we said before, a tavlin. It's an antidote to protect him against all the influences and the allurements of the Yetzer Hara. And if that be the case, we should really anticipate and expect that Noach would pass this legacy on to his children. And in that context, Cham was guilty, because Cham was the one son of the three of Noach who absolutely refused to accept and be influenced by the Torah. He wasn't interested in that legacy. And it's interesting, he could have three brothers, two out of the three are interested, and one is not interested. But I think if anyone here would be at liberty to describe what happened in his family or his broader family, you will see that you could have two brothers and one goes this way and the other goes that way. I'm not saying they're twins, but this is quite common. And therefore, although Yefes and especially Shem were dedicated to the legacy of their father, in this case Torah, Cham was not. And therefore Cham, because he wasn't dedicated to Torah study, he was subject and exposed to the influences of the Yetzer Hara. And I see we ran out of time now, but if you take a quick peek at page 3, you're going to see a whole discussion here about Yisurin, which is absolutely fantastic. We'll have to curtail our discussion here. But we did cover most of what I had prepared for today. And if you can, again, anyone who's interested and pleased taking these pages, and you don't have to give them back, we won't send you a bill for them. And if you get a chance to study them, the most important page for our purpose, if you can at least do this much, are two paragraphs on page 3. And that's in the middle column of the paragraph that says, Umizeh Naskil Lahavin. And the next paragraph, Lefi Zeh, you'll underline the words Shoresh Hayirida Shalcham Hu Shalorotza Lilmo Torah Eitzel Noach Aviv, which means the root of Cham's problem was, and his sin was, the fact that he was not dedicated to his father's legacy of the Torah study. And then I want you to fast forward to the left column, that's the Sfasemis in the second paragraph, and there we're going to see why it is that Cham was A, guilty of the sins of Vayar and Vayaged, in the fact that he was deficient in Torah, and number 2, we're going to appreciate why it is that this curse, as a punishment to Ham and specifically to his children through Canaan, is the appropriate punishment for that particular episode of Vayar and Vayaged. So if you can, and you can find the time just for those three paragraphs, I think that'll help in understanding everything that we spoke about today. But basically the punchline of this whole essay is that Torah study, whether it's Torah Shebaksav, the written Torah, or Torah Shebalpeh, as long as there's Yigiyah, as long as you're genuine and you work hard, that Torah that you study is going to protect you against all the evil forces of the Yetzer Hara. That's called Torah Tavlin. But moreover, that's going to protect you and save you from the Yisurin, because the Torah itself will be Mamarik Es Ha'adam, will cleanse the person and purify him in a cathartic way, and that will substitute for the need for Yisurin. So we should all be Zochem Hashem to dedicate ourselves to the study of Torah, and we will enjoy the benefits therein. I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom to everyone. And I'll see you in Hashem next.